this is Kathy Benner, and I am here today with Connie Spruill. She is my co-team host, and today we are going to meet and interview Linda Altka. She is an author of the book Pebbles in My Shoe. But before we do that, I want to just give a brief overview of who we are. Connie and I are the Women of Winchester. We're coordinating a business networking group, and we hold meetings once a month at a physical location here in Central Ohio to discuss our practical contemporary topics relevant to our members. But our plan is to interview and record so that we can reach a further area, a larger geographic area. So with that, I'm going to introduce Linda. She is very passionate about helping people break through conflict so they can pursue their potential. Through her writing, coaching, and training, Linda creates space where people feel safe to be real and discover new insights that open doors to their potential. So welcome, Linda. How are you today?
I am doing great. Good morning, Connie and Kathy. Great to be with you this morning.
We're delighted to have you as our first interviewee.
Well, I am honored and looking forward to adding value to the women of Winchester. I'm honored to be here, and across the miles we can connect as women with common purpose and common challenges, which is why we're here, is to talk about conflict, which I think is a common denominator for anyone that has any relationship in their life.
Absolutely. Linda, I met you last year at a mutual conference that we both attended, and I heard you speak, and I hurriedly went to the back of the room and purchased your book. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. So why did you write the book, Pebbles in My Shoe, The 3 Steps to Breaking Through Interpersonal Conflict?
Well, when I traveled with a singing and drama team immediately after college, I traveled, so you can picture this, 7 women, 4 men in a van for 9 months. And I immediately learned that conflict doesn't go away by ignoring it. We were living in community, and even our days off were spent together. And I thought, you know, we can be really tense with one another, or we can work this out, and we can have our energy focused on what's really important. And what happened after I finished this tour, I started my work at a nonprofit organization. I was there for about 10 years, then went to a for-profit corporate environment. And what I realized is that conflict is everywhere, and the potential for conflict exists when there's more than one person in the room. In fact, I joke and say even when I'm the only one in the room, there's potential for conflict. And what I found is that when we resolve conflict, we can actually enrich the relationships that we're in. When we avoid conflict, it can distract us. It can sabotage our energy that we really need on a day-to-day basis. We only have a limited amount of energy. And when we resolve the conflicts instead of let them become annoyances or pebbles in our shoes, as I use as a metaphor, we can walk with more freedom. We can focus on our life mission, on the things that we need to do on a day-to-day basis without, I call it an energy drip, of what can happen sometimes when we have conflict that goes unresolved.
Wow, that's amazing. So it sounds like just about everybody would benefit from reading the book. What are those 3 steps for breaking through the interpersonal conflict?
Well, each step has a few sub-steps. The book is actually not very long. If anyone is one that says, I want the solutions and I want them quickly, this might be a really good book for you, because it's chock full of stories and very simple principles. So the 3 steps, I use a metaphor of mountain climbing, and I talk about the base camp. First of all, the preparation, the time where we really need to get our heads in a good place, because when it's easy to confront, that's usually not the best time to confront, because then we approach it in a, well, here goes nothing, they have it coming kind of attitude, and usually we do a lot more damage, and we have to, and we leave dead bodies in our wake. But if we prepare well, the amount of preparation that we do is usually an indicator of how well the conversation will go. And so the preparation, or the base camp, as I call it, gets our minds and our hearts in a good place. So we go into the conversation well prepared, and also we come from a vantage point of curious rather than judgment. So the preliminary steps are there, and there's a template for how to prepare. And then the second step is the actual conversation, or I call it the ascent. And it lays out a template, a roadmap for how to start the conversation. And the one who's approaching, so if I'm approaching my husband about a conflict, I want to prepare a one-minute opening statement that keeps the defenses low, helps him know exactly what I want to talk about, give some examples, and I own part of this. I come into the conversation with a desire to learn, a desire to hear his perspective, and we're seeing it as a partnership, exploring, as opposed to me against him with this problem in between us. So the second step is the actual conversation, and I give a template for how to start that conversation and how to keep the defenses low, how to keep the conversation going, because when defenses are raised, it can easily derail a conversation, and that's when it goes south and the productive part of the conversation is over. And then the third step is the summit. It's the gratification. It's getting an agreement established. It's based on the insights that we had, based on the things that we learned in this conversation. This is what we're going to do differently. This is what I will commit to doing. And then talking about a follow-up, circling back and saying, how are we doing? It's easy to settle back into old habits or old perceptions. And so that third step talks about how will we be different when we go forward. And what's exciting about getting to that third step is I believe that when we resolve conflict, the relationship many times is even better than before the conflict even started, because we've worked through it, we've learned from each other's perspective, and we go forward with a deeper, richer relationship.
Amazing, yes.
I have been in situations like that where conflicts have been resolved, and I have some lifelong friends as a result, and it's just all about how you're looking at situations. And why is it, what's at stake when a conflict goes unresolved? What happens? I mean, there's lots of things that come into play when we don't resolve a conflict. What answer do you have for something like that?
That's right. Yes, great question. When we don't resolve conflict, and I say, you know, everybody has at least one difficult person, and typically we're related to at least one of them, and they don't go away. They're at every family reunion, they're at every holiday, and I believe that when we resolve conflicts, we get better. And I tell the story in the book Pebbles in My Shoe about a team of five vice presidents that I coach, and I coach them all, and I hear about their conflicts and what happens. And there is one particular conflict I tell about in the book where this man and woman were at odds with one another. One of them had said something that offended the other in front of the president of the organization, and they were giving each other the silent treatment. And this was a tight team that did things outside of work. They really enjoyed each other's company. And so when they were together for team meetings, the brainstorming, the creative energy was void, was completely depleted, and they did not. It took them a long time to resolve this conflict because there was pride at stake, and they didn't want to be the first to say I'm sorry. But the team energy, their joy was sucked out of their day because that other person was always there. And frankly, we have limited amount of energy, and when we are sabotaged in our energy, when it goes into conflict that's unresolved, we lose our focus, and frankly, we can even lose our passion and our energy that is supposed to be invested in pursuing our life calling. And I believe that we all have dreams inside us that are God-given, that we need to run after. But when we have these conflicts that go unresolved, it gets us off course, and it keeps us from doing what we really should be doing and what we really are passionate about doing.
Yes, I have to agree with that. In your book, you talk about untangling facts and stories. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that means?
Yes, well, what happens when when somebody does something we don't understand, why did they do what they did? In the absence of information, we make up stuff. And then what happens is we act as if it's true. And so we start with, this is something I don't understand. And Brené Brown, in her book Rising Strong, I quote her in my book because she talks about the stories we create. And she quotes a neurologist that says, when we don't understand what somebody does, we make things up. And when we get to closure of, oh, yeah, this is why they did what they did, we don't need to be right, we just need to be sure. We get to the sense of, oh yeah, that's why they did what they did. We get a shot of dopamine, which is the feel-good part of our brain. We get a little spurt of dopamine from our brain that makes us feel settled. And we don't have to be right, we just have to be sure. And so what happens is we create stories about why somebody did what they did, and then we proceed as if it's true. And that's what gets us into trouble. So when we can, in the preparation, in the base camp, one of the steps is to untangle fact from story and say, you know what's really uncontestable? I call it digitally recordable facts, meaning if there was a camera in the room when this happened, what would the camera record objectively? And write down those facts. And then the rest is really story. It's really the things we make up about what happened. And those are the things we need to hold lightly. Those are the things we need to check. We need to say, you know, the story I'm telling myself is. And then let them tell us how they see it. And that's when we can walk into a conversation with confidence that we're going to talk about these facts that everyone's going to agree on. And then we're going to explore our stories and learn from each other as to how we see it, how we each see it, so that we can get clear on what really were the intentions.
I see. Kathy, you and I have talked about this before. We've been around a long time, and we have all encountered conflicts and mainly about making assumptions regarding negative intentions. That's something I think that happens a lot in the workplace, don't you think, Kathy?
Oh, I think so. And,
yes,
and after
yeah.
reading Linda's book, I've used her principles, and it makes life so much easier.
Yeah.
So,
yes, and you know what? To get back to a question that we asked you early on about the book is a small book, I read it in 45 minutes and went back and read it a second time. It's that good, especially in these areas. So why do you feel it's important to reflect on what part we played in a conflict? Because I've been on both sides. I'm not perfect.
You know, that is a great question, because what happens when we're in a conflict with someone, we really think it's all their fault. And when they sense the tension, they usually think it's our fault. So when we prepare and get ready for this conversation, we can ask ourselves and reflect on what part could we possibly have played? What could we have done or maybe not done that had a part in this conflict? It does a number of things. One thing it does is it keeps us humble. And when we go into this conversation and we can own part of it, when we can absorb some of the blame and say, you know what, I apologize for this part, or there's amazing potency in an apology. And you don't have to apologize for everything, because it's not any one person's fault. entirely, but if there is one part that we say, you know what, upon reflection, I really could have done something differently. When we can absorb some of that blame, what happens is when we go into a conversation where we're willing to own part of it, there's this boomerang effect, and then typically they're willing to own a part of it. And there's a sense of non-defensiveness. When I go in with humility and say, you know what, I think I have my DNA on this. My fingerprint is in this conflict. It's amazing how it diffuses the tension. And when we can diffuse defensiveness, what happens when psychologically when we go into a conversation and we say something that triggers defensiveness in that other person, what happens is they go from maybe where they started with a sense of I'm willing to learn, they go into a mode of defending their dignity. They feel backed into a corner, and all their energy goes into defending their dignity. So if we go into a conversation determined to keep the defenses low, determined to own part of this, it keeps the tone in the conversation in non-defensive, and then each person is much more open to learning. They're much more open to say, you know what? Wow, you've got a good point. Let me hear more. And then when we have this sense of, oh, I want to hear your perspective, we're digging in, we're curious, we're about learning, it's amazing how we can come out of that conversation with ahas, with insights, with new approaches that will be so much more effective.
That's definitely some good information.
Linda, how can we start a conflict resolution conversation? What are the elements to get a conversation started off right?
Well, I talk about the steps in the book that it's in it. So I'm going to hit the high points, and I'm going to I expound on them in the book. This is the template that I recommend for opening up a conversation and keeping the defenses low. So the first step is to state the issue without blame. And that's where sometimes it helps to have a person we trust help us extract some of the blame, because sometimes it's we get so entangled in what seems to be true that sometimes it's so easy to insert some story or insert some non-factual parts of the opening statement. So we want to keep that opening statement free of blame. So stating the issue and then giving one or two examples. And I say one or two because sometimes we can make a list of 10 or 12, and when we start going through a list of 10 to 12 examples, it can feel like a dumping session, and the person can check out. On the other hand, if we have no examples, and if we just say, you need to get better, you need to improve, well, people do what makes sense to them. And so if there's no examples, it's hard for them to know what to change, what to improve. So it's important to give one or two examples. And as I talk about in the book, and I dive into this in a deeper way, but those examples need to be objective, as a camera would record them, like we already talked about it. If a camera was in the room, how would the camera record them so they're very objective? And then in the preparation, you did this homework already, share what part you've played. Say, I have some ownership in this. This is something that I need to own, and for that I apologize. And then invite them to give their perspective. So that opening statement really should be less than a minute. If it goes longer than that, it's too long, and they'll likely either get defensive or check out. So those four simple steps to get the conversation started, what I found is when people use that format, it starts it in a very clear way. We don't put in too many, I call it too many pillows. Sometimes those of us who don't want to rile up any defensiveness, we get so soft about what we want to say that they don't even know what we're trying to talk about. So that template helps us be clear and start the conversation in a non-defensive way.
Yeah. I really liked that part of the book, I think, most, only because the steps are so simplistic. And anyone should be able to read the book and be able to apply it immediately. That's what I liked about the book, I think, so much more than anything else. Just so simple. And, gee, I wish I'd had this when I was growing up with my five brothers and sisters.
Wow, lots of material and chances to practice there.
Oh, yes. So why is it important to come to an agreement at the close of a conflict resolution conversation?
When we have some new insights, it's easy to go away from a conversation and really fall back into old habits. So when we come to an agreement and say, as a result of what I've learned here, I'm going to show up differently, I'm going to act differently, it shows intentionality. It helps. When I say I'm going to do something different, we're accountable. We have this sense of saying, I respect you enough, and I've learned some things here about how I can be even more effective in this relationship. And when we change, the relationship changes. When we go into a relationship and say, I'm willing to do something different, we will get different results. And if we go back into old habits, we're going to continue to get the same results. So that agreement helps that closure happen, and a sense of we're going to continue our relationship in a more effective way. And it helps us then when we also commit to circling back. When we say, let's circle back in a week or 2 weeks and have a check-in. How are we doing? Are the things that we learned about one another and the agreements that we've made, are we keeping up our end of the agreement? And fine-tuning, I call them housekeeping conversations, where we say, you know, thank you so much for doing this. It would help me even more if you would tweak this, or we treat each other like this. And so when we talk about how we want to be treated, when we talk about how the other person wants to be treated, we can get more of what we want and less of what we don't want.
Wow. Kathy, I know you had a couple other questions that we had discussed that haven't come up yet. Did you get your questions answered?
Well, I do have one big question for Linda. What happens if you're in the room with two folks that are having a conflict, and one isn't willing to even have the conversation? Where does that leave the one that wants to have the conversation?
So just so that I'm clear, so you're not part of the conflict. You're watching this happen with two other people. Is that right?
Correct, and they're trying. The one person in the conflict is trying to resolve it, but the other person wants no part of a resolution. They just want to be angry.
That's a great question. And here's what I've found is that when there's anger in the room, that's not a good time. Typically, when there's defensiveness or there's a sense of the emotion is really strong, it's better to wait to have that conversation at another time, because even neurologically, we don't have the smarter parts of our brain accessible to us when we're angry. And so if we can find a different time where that party can cool down, get to a better place, reschedule. And there is also in the book a model for what happens when you're not the one that's in the conflict, but you have been given permission to help two other people come together to have that conversation. Most of the book I talk about, it's really preparing for a conversation when we want to approach somebody else. But I know that when people are in leadership positions, and you two, Kathy and Connie, are in leadership roles, where there's times where you're not the one who's having the conflict, but you have the opportunity to facilitate a conflict resolution conversation. And there's a model in the book that you can use to help two people come together and resolve a conflict. But the timing is really important. It's good that there's preparation. I learned this way back on when I was on the road with the singing and drama team. When I had a conversation that I needed to have with somebody, I wanted to give them a heads up it was coming. And so typically I would say, I need to have a conversation with you. I would like to resolve something that's been really on my mind. Can we talk tomorrow? What time would be a good time to talk? And what happens is they start saying, oh, what's going on? And they start reflecting, and they start getting into a place where they're curious, and you can tell them the topic typically, but it's better to just give them a heads up that this is a conversation that we need to have, and they get prepared. As we're preparing our 60-second opening statement, they're preparing their heart and mind as well.
Oh, that's very interesting. Linda, I'm going to take that to heart. Absolutely. One last question that I have for you, and it's a little off topic, but it is about you personally. How did you decide, and I'm sure it might be through the conference where you and I met and that whole environment, but how did you decide to actually write a book and start the coaching and take it a step further? We have some listeners that not only are they going to benefit from hearing about the conflict resolution in the book itself, Pebbles in My Shoe, but they might be asking themselves a question, how can I be Linda? How can I be someone like her and bring my topic to the table? Can you tell us a little bit about how you decided to do that?
Yes, great question. Well, I felt called to write this book, and I joke this is really like birthing a baby in a lot of ways. Is there's this sense of calling. I feel like I need to birth this thing because it's a message that I believe, just this is my perspective, I believe is God-given, and I felt this sense of responsibility for putting this into print. And because of my experiences and what happened even in nonprofit as well as corporate environments is I just found myself being that person, that employee relations role where people would stop in and say, Linda, I'm having a struggle with this person. Can you help me talk through this? And so it's something that seemed to come to me, and I don't take credit for it. I feel like it's the whole conflict resolution process is a God-given thing, and I'm right in the center of my passion when I am helping people resolve conflict. And so I believe that everybody has a God-given dream, a God-given purpose inside them. And so if you're listening to this and you say, oh, this particular problem is something I feel passionate about solving, if that's something that you would love to spend more time on, because I believe that, in fact, there's statistics that over 80% of people are in jobs that are sucking the life out of them. They are not truly in the center of their calling. I believe it takes courage to step out and say, all right, I want to do something that has more purpose for me. And that's part of my coaching, part of what I love to do is help people drill down into what are they called to do. And so when I think about this, the resolution of conflict, it goes in tandem to my passion of helping people do what they love to do and channel their energy towards what they love to do. And conflict simply sabotages that precious energy. So let's resolve the conflicts. Let's walk with more freedom in our relationships so that we can pursue our calling. So I found a coach, and he has helped me for the past 5.5 years launch my business, write my book. He's helped me get to the point where my self-limiting beliefs, I can get beyond those because we all have self-limiting beliefs. And in order to, we don't know what we don't know. So that's where it's been my privilege to be in a coaching relationship with my coach, Carrie Oberbrunner. And then I pass on to my coaching clients the things that I've learned and allow them to really get in touch with what is it that they are called to do.
So if there's someone out there listening that wants to go to the next step, to create something on for themselves along this line that they can actually connect with you and you can help them with that.
My website is a great place to find me. It's on the web. You can find me at lindaoutka.com, so lindaoutka.com, and you can fill out a contact form, and I answer every one of those personally. It comes to my inbox in my email, and you can put the theme of what it is you'd like to talk about. And what I typically do when somebody is interested in finding out if we would be a good partnership is I give them a complimentary coaching session by phone, by Skype, and see if we'd be a good partnership. And it's my passion to add value. I know that a complimentary coaching session usually brings to the forefront whether we're a good match, and then we can decide how we can proceed. And I would be very honored to connect with any listener who would like to explore whether we could be a good partnership, and for the purpose of helping that person find their dream and walk out their passion on a daily basis.
Perfect, perfect. Connie, did you have any other questions?
I have one last question. In what places can our listening audience purchase Pebbles in My Shoe?
Well, the easiest place I found is to just go on Amazon.com, and you can search Pebbles in My Shoe or Linda Outka, and it'll pop up, and you can purchase it right there. There's also a Kindle version. You can also go to your Barnes & Noble. If it's not on the shelf, they can order it. If you'd like to work with a brick-and-mortar, all the Barnes & Nobles, and any brick-and-mortar bookstore can order it for you. So you can work with the online option or the brick-and-mortar option, and you can secure a copy.
And thank you, our listening audience. This is Connie Sproul, and
it's Kathy Benner.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.